Hey, folks, welcome to Long Shots. Hey, Sharad, how's it going, man?
It's going very well. And another episode, another exciting day.
Absolutely. So today we have with us Mr. Sachindra Nath, Executive Chairman and MD of YouGrow Capital, a listed tech-focused SME lender. You know, I get so excited about talking about credit.
And lending, yeah.
And lending, so I'm practically giddy. In anticipation of having this conversation. Mr. Nath, welcome to the show. So obviously, you know, we kind of have seen YouGrow. It's a very differentiated model, we felt, because, you know, you have a very sectoral focus from day one. You obviously have a very distinguished and long lineage of looking at financial institutions. You were formerly at Invesco India. You also were group CEO of Religare. And obviously at YouGrow, you're much more focused on SME lending, which has anyways become a very topical theme during COVID times. So the first thing that I just want to bring to the conversation is, like, there are many numbers floating around in terms of what is the MSME addressable market in India. And, you know, everywhere we go, we look at like a $400 to $500 billion number. But only one third of that is kind of served by the formal banking sector, a small chunk of it by scheduled commercial banks, and the rest by, you know, NBFCs and platforms such as yours. So you know, information asymmetry is always a very predominant theme within MSME space. And obviously your particular platform is now almost, I think, 2 years in the running. How have you seen things change? I mean, it's a very high level view I would like to take to start the conversation.
I just feel like, you know, I'll spend 2 minutes of why I did that, right? And obviously it's good to talk. I always get very motivated when I see people from very different background and doing very different things in life, right? Two of you as banker and research analyst covering sell side, and now building a content platform is very exciting to see you guys. But my journey has been even more weird than what you can think of, right? I'm born in Banarasi, born and brought up in Banaras. I spent my first 10 years of career near to my hometown. I was a single child of my parents. So I spent my first 10 years of life in corporate industry in rural. By profession, I'm a lawyer, actually. And in 1998, actually, I shifted to Delhi and in financial services industry, spent around 15 years. And during that period, so I started from seeing really ground rural, you know, weaver which used to make carpet, and, you know, how his life had been difficult in order to get even a 10,000 rupees of financing. And from there, I moved to, you know, be part of a very large diversified financial services business, wherein I saw, you know, investment banks, private business, two insurance companies, a global asset management business, which had 21 asset management companies, lending, you know, housing, all of them. And as a life, it turned to be, at some point of time, I decided that's not something which I would like to do forever, and said that, look, I have to do something which is more meaningful. And obviously, I had learned hard only financial services. I had a choice to make what in financial services I would do. This is really meaningful. And when I left and, you know, and decided to be entrepreneur, I looked at two things. I said that, why is that the number you quoted, that there is roughly around $400 billion gap, a large portion of our GDP is serviced by these small businesses. Our problem of employment in the country would not get solved because we are not effectively an industrial nation. It would get solved by all these small stores, small businesses. But why there is no capital available to them in any form and shape? And I define it this way in a very simple way. If you think of a mainline lender or a large lender, because they are large and they do almost everything, and that's what led YouGrow to be a very deeply highly specialized business. You should think of this way. Think of a large bank and whose credit officer go to two types of customers. First customer, which is a dental clinic, and second customer, which is an IVF clinic. If you don't understand that these two clinics are different type of clinic, you will end up asking the same question to underwrite that customer. And if you are a 10-year plus or 6-year plus underwriting officer, you know some sense of what a clinic is. And you will believe that, you know, number of patients is higher, you know, higher the number of patients is higher the number of revenue. And you will end up asking the same question. Sir, aapke yahan kitne customer roj aate hain? Then you will ask the same question to dentist, you will ask the same question to IVF clinic. Now that they would know why you're asking this question. They, so the dentist would say 25 every day. IVF clinic would say once a day, one maybe. And the credit officer would believe that the IVF clinic is a bad business and dentist is a very good business. Little, because in his mind, high, you know, he will multiply some gross revenue to number of patients. Little realized the underlying business model of an IVF clinic is to have lower number of patients, but the, every patient has a very high NUP value and it's a very high paying customer. But so dentist is a one-time customer, go come get cleaning done and go out, right? So that's what I call the non-homogeneous nature of SME business. Every small business, right? So technically you are a content company, so there is no difference between you, Ken, Eating Prime, and so many other platforms, VC Circle. But you, all of you cannot be evaluated on same basis. But because within the content industry, as a small business, each one of you have a very, very degree of business model. Now, if you, as a large diversified lender, if you start evaluating a non-homogeneous sector on a homogeneous or a templated format, you don't solve that problem. So that was the idea. How do you go and build a platform which can solve the problem of the credit by looking at small homogeneity in a large non-homogeneous sector? And the way we thought that we can do is that first you need to understand the customer. And that's why we said we will build a specialization. Because India's small businesses operate out of 180 odd sectors and roughly around 2000 plus subsectors. That's the universe. So we said we can't do service everyone. We need to service few. So we picked up our 8 sectors. Then we said, okay, so for example, healthcare is a sector for us. But what do you mean by healthcare? It can be a large hospital to a very small OPD clinic. So within that healthcare, we chose certain select sectors which we thought that there is a need of credit. So pharmacy, radiology clinic, small nursing home, dentist, IVF clinic. And having, you know, so out of 8 sectors, we build our subsector thinking. And then we build the data analytics and technology and a credit underwriting platform which actually can go and solve the problem of credit for each of these subsectors. So that's the reincarnation of Ugrow of, and you know, and we decided to do it by two more of a one. I wanted to build this business for perpetuity because I took a call that I will raise all my capital from institutional investor. It just so happened that I ended up raising the largest capital ever in India, almost 1,000 crore. But I never wanted to be under the pressure to be sold out in few years time, and that's why I felt that, you know, if you build a listed company, investors have exit from the market while the company continues to grow perpetually.
Yeah. You know, Mr. Nath, you talked about sectoral and your focus as one of the ways to, you know, get a sense of common traits among these things. But how granular can you go? Like, do you see sector-wise, do you see like similar default rates or similar quality of credit across those industries? How deep can you get? Because, you know, you also said like knowing your customer better. It's like at some point of time, like it, one has to make a call on how granular one can get in terms of usage of tech to better understand the credit profile of a potential borrower, right?
And that's where I think so. The only way to do is that of think about this as a completely digital platform where it comes to understanding the customer. So conventionally, you know, this is not just in India, right? So the problem of credit, by the way, is not just an India problem, right? It exists in US, it exists in Canada, it exists in Australia, it exists in UK. Some of the world's most mature market as well. The reason for that is that you expect that each of your frontline staff, sales or underwriting, would understand the customer and basis that can give decisions. That's impossible, right? It's impossible for some sets of people who come from very different background that they all of a sudden they will become expert of everything. And that limits the ability of creating this, you know, this funnel and this kind of thing. And that's where we think we have to use, you know, India, you know, I think in terms of digitization and data, what is coming for all kind of business. For consumer, that has already happened. What we are seeing now for SME. So the way we solved this problem, we said we need to use data analytics, and first platform that we built was on the basis of the bureau. What you will realize when it comes to consumer finance in India, the bureau data is so mature. If you have a 750 plus score and you know enter into a Chroma store, you can get a loan in 2 minutes time, right? Reason for that is that if you have a 750 score, every lender knows that your default ratio will be sub 0.5%. But when if you are a business, you still have a credit score, which is a, you know, SME business score or SME credit score, but nobody looks at it that, because people think, hey, I have to go and meet the customer, understand him, and then only I can say yes and no. We changed that. We said that there is, if there is a bureau data, or if there is a data which can be pre-analyzed, then that should be the decisioning point for saying yes and no to the customer. And we looked at almost 8 million loan record of last 5 years. We filtered that loan record. Say, because we raised all our capital in July 2018. We didn't start our business till April of 2019. So 1 year of deep work which we did. So we looked at the entire loan population of India. We looked at the entire data available for on the bureau. We filtered the bureau's records on the basis of sector, subsectors, geography and ticket size. And basis that, we created our sectoral, you know, bureau altered scorecard, which we call GROWS. So now we know and we have tested. So for example, post-COVID, we have come at almost 95% collection efficiency because of that. So that's what I say, that there is a homogeneous nature within the large dispersed non-homogeneous, right? So nursing home in a particular geography behave in a particular fashion, right? But the same nursing home between a Chandigarh and a Chennai would behave differently, right? Because one, there is a geographical impact, right? There is a behavioral science around that. And also there is a leverage impact. And if you are a nursing home with a 50 crore of loan and an X amount of revenue, the way you will behave versus a nursing home with the same revenue with a 5 crore loan. So that is what we used and built our data analytics platform on. And second, what we did is that we standardized the process of underwriting. So we actually did this 3 year of research, and we looked at the whole universe of small businesses and actually clustered them in 2 parts, bad customers and good customers on rating data. And then we went and met almost 1,000 customers per sector and then analyzed what operating parameters actually make a good customer, survive and grow. To give you an example, if you think of a neighborhood doctor, the reason why you go to that doctor is because, you know, he has been at that place for more than 10 years or 15 years, right? So you trust him. But when you it's about your child's birth, you go to a maternity hospital whose infrastructure is really good. Right? So we looked at those parameters. We, for example, in K-12 school, we realized that if schools are not paying salaries to the teacher, which is the core asset of an educational institute, those schools normally default on their loan. So we put almost 70 parameter templated underwriting platform. So now our underwriter, when they go and meet the customer, they don't use that kind of a, unrelated judgment. They pull up on the system, the subsector, and they know what they have to ask for. And each of those parameters are given a weight, and that weight converts into an underwriting score. So think of us in this way. We have two platforms. One is a filtration platform, which is completely driven on bureau data, and then designed on sector and subsector. And then once the customer passed that filter, when our underwriter goes and meet the customer, either digitally or physically, then he know what to ask and what to look at that customer.
I mean, like you mentioned, bureau data as the first line of filter. And like within the MSME segment itself, I mean, the quality of information, is not going to be probably at the kind of quality that one would expect from larger enterprises, and that's the reason why probably you are looking at second or third internal layers of data filtration and customization of underwriting that you do on a sector by sector basis. If we kind of just step back and we keep on hearing about RBI.
Sorry, I just want to make a point on quality of data, right? So actually, honestly speaking, post GST, actually the quality of data is not. It depends what data as a lending institution you want to see. So we are all trained, or lending institutions are all trained that the lending can be done basis your historical cash flow. Right? And when you say historical cash flow, what is your last year tax return, what was your balance sheet, what was your profit and loss account? In a small business, actually that becomes irrelevant. One, because the MSME and MSME have not understood that maintaining, everything on the book is so important, but now they have got forced to it because of the GST itself. If you forget your pre-historical learnings of how to underwrite, and if you look at only two data points, the banking for the customer and the GST for the customer. And the kind of infrastructure which is, you know, what we call India Stack 2 is getting built now, you don't need anything else. You know, GST is so powerful. If you look at just GST, so all our customer we pull GST data. It's a compulsory input parameter. And with the GST, you can actually, you know, triangulate any form of information of the customer. Who you sell, what you sell, type of customers, you know, everything is available. And then you triangulate that by his banking, which is also getting digitized, right, with account aggregation, OK network, and so on and so forth. If you do that and combine that with some form of a pre-historical statistical analysis, actually, I'm seeing the SME financing industry to become a, you know, a revolution in India as the payment platform has happened. So you see that happening very soon. It's a matter of time.
So you are saying that, like, you know, like, for instance, the regulator, like RBI, has been making noises about, you know, having like a public credit registry for quite some time. I think in March 2020, they finally, I think, also mandated a few tech consultants to implement that project. You think the GST framework is sufficient to take SME lending to the next level? So macro level interventions from the regulator, they are good to have, but they are not something that you must require to be a good underwriter.
So I think the public credit registry is less to do with MSME and SME customer. It is for broader market, right? And it's not that it's not there. So you have bureau, you have click, and you know now government and RBI want to build a public credit registry that will come in place. But especially for small businesses, actually, you know, the kind of it. So what you have is already GST, which gives you all kind of turnover data for the customer, right? And that turnover data is not just his turnover, it's also the quality of the turnover. Am I a small business? Am I selling to Procter & Gamble or am I selling to Havells? Or, you know, so everything is available on that. Second is all my banking information. Right? So if I can, you know, look at their banking and see how much of debit is there, how much of credit is there, whether that, you know, triangulate well with his turnover, what is the current obligation and what is the margin available to the business. What is now happening in the third phase is the integration of these. So I don't know whether you've heard, so there is a concept of account aggregation is coming. Only 5 entities are licensed. iSpirit, Nandan actually, launched that. So now on the account aggregation side, the account aggregator, as a lender, I would be able to pull, you are a small business, I'll be able to pull all your banking information and also all your GST information. And then depending upon my risk appetite, I will triangulate that. So lending is, these are data. Now that data is only useful if you have the ability to deep analyze it, triangulate it, and give something in offer. So yesterday actually, for example, you know, we are piloting ourselves to be the first lender to get integrated on GeM Sahay. So GeM is the Government of India, you know, portal for, you know, it's like Amazon of Government of India, right? Because all government public purchases are happening on that platform. And, you know, the way it is, you know, it can provide financing to small businesses is unimaginable. It is just a matter of time when it would pick up.
Right. And, you know, like now let's kind of talk a bit about the last 6 to 8 months. I mean, naturally, post-January, once the COVID pandemic in real terms hit India, with the lockdown coming in and with the government making both fiscal as well as monetary policy measures, MSMEs was always a big focus area, right? I mean, I think in terms of liquidity support, those were one of the few significant announcements which came through. Obviously, there are critics also in terms of, you know, how much of the government's balance sheet itself is going into it, but within the Indian ecosystem, I think the government followed a fairly different approach from what you saw in the US, where the Fed was directly underwriting, whereas in India it was all intermediate through financial institutions. What was your overall take on the relief which has been announced, especially for MSMEs? You know, we have the 3 lakh crore guaranteed loans. There was also like talks about a sub-debt injection as well as some sort of an equity fund of funds. Obviously, on the number 2 and the number 3 announcements, there's still a fair amount of clarity, which everybody is, I think, waiting for. But what's your like overall read on things as they stand?
Yeah, so I think the way to think about it, I think so. I have never seen this level of innovative thinking of a government which is on a, from a fiscal parameter is highly constrained. So I think the government very creatively thought of what we create off balance sheet liquidity and to be available to almost every segment of the market. And there the focus was, or I believe this is my conclusion, that they said the large players, even if they are airlines or, you know, you see what is happening in Senate for the airline support in US, right, where Trump is fighting. But government here in India believed that large players or large corporate would be able to manage themselves. The support is needed to small businesses, and that's why most of the endeavors were done towards that. And government used its sovereign power or sovereign support, but the liquidity they kind of, you know, moved from where the liquidity was available, banks and financial institutions. So you are right that it was not direct balance sheet deployment by the government, but it was, you know, finally sovereign stood behind it. So then that's why there is so much of liquidity, because there is so much of risk aversion. Now, whether it was sufficient or not sufficient, but it was critical and it was quite a bit. So if that would have not happened, you would have seen the MSMEs would have gone down very up big time. And always there is an area of improvement. So that's my take. And if I look at on the sum aggregation basis, I think so there is practice, there is 1,60,000 crore or 1,75,000 crore has got dispersed under emergency credit line. It's not a small sum for our type of the size of the country. On the subject and all that is not taken off, which should take off. I think so on the one of the core financiers for SMEs have been NBFCs in our country, and they have been suffering from liquidity. I see there the government focused till date have been to avoid accidents in the or maintain the financial health of the, you know, of the markets per se. So their focus was to prevent any form of default, liquidity risk. And at some point in time, they have to now focus in systematically provide liquidity for growth, which is not yet happening. So we are an odd one because we raised our capital in just a year back, so we have sufficient liquidity, we are flooded with liquidity, and we are using that to grow. But majority of the other NBFC are still don't have capital to manage growth, but there is no risk of defaults any further, right? What the way it was being seen after IL&FS, Yes Bank, and DHFL, that risk is gone more or less.
But I mean, like, you know, there are two paths to it, right? I mean, if you look at, the critics often, like critics have been saying that, you know, the biggest 20 or 30 companies in the country have probably benefited the most from all the liquidity which is sitting in, because there's a general risk-off environment, right? I mean, like suddenly, like if you look at any of the top-rated mutual funds also at the moment, like on the debt side, pretty much everyone's exposure is to AAA. I mean, the demarcation between AAA and AA and A, that has also kind of, you know, been under question now. And when we look at the 3 lakh crore government guarantee or the emergency credit line, I mean, the critics again come and say that, you know, there are obviously too many thresholds which have to be met. As a result of that, dispersal is not as good as one would have hoped, you know, from an implementation perspective. There are too many conditions which the MSMEs need to satisfy. Do you buy that narrative?
While obviously it doesn't look nice that in the first TLTRO scheme, most of the money went to the AAA and, you know, the top quartile AAA. But, you know, you have to appreciate that, you know, and obviously everything you think, there are two sides of the story. Obviously, RBI felt at that point of time that cheap liquidity would drive so banks would be motivated by higher yield. So the spread would make sure, but obviously banks are also coming a 10-year of a very bad credit, you know, behavior curve, and they are highly risk averse. So that didn't motivate them too much, and that's why the cheap liquidity went into a very high yield. But immediately on the TLTRO2, they actually corrected it, and then, you know, created a subsidiary. But the fact is that banks are risk averse, and they should be, because if the same banks today lend to indiscriminately to everyone, and 3 years down the line when their balance sheet will blow up, you and me will again be the same people who give the narrative that, you know, these banks are so, because 70% of Indian banks are our banks, right? We are the taxpayers and our money. Then you will say, oh, these banks are indiscriminate, they don't do a good job, their quality of management is poor. Not that the quality of the management of private sector bank have been very great. But unfortunately, the big public sector banks get all the flack on that. So, and that's why government has then after that has said, okay, if banks and financial institutions are risk averse, we'll provide sovereign guarantee around something. So banks, you know, government came with what is called partial credit guarantee scheme. And that actually was quite successful. So majority of the liquidity which has come to the NBFC has come because of partial credit guarantee scheme. The banks think that if the 10% of the first loss cover is with the government, it's a good credit, right? So now I can lend to an A-rated NBFC. Look, this is unprecedented. Markets are not functioning in a normalized curve. If you are an investor in a mutual fund which has exposure to all BBB paper, you would be the first one to withdraw that money from that mutual fund. So there is no choice that they have to keep it there because you know they have seen AAA falling to going to junk. Right? So this is not normalized time. Besides the government is doing what they should do, demand side has to come up better and we have to just wait it out. This time will pass.
You know, just switching a little bit to your own business here, you know, how do you think of, you know, you're primarily equity funded and that sort of, you know, sits nicely in your model. But I recently saw that you guys raised some debt as well. How do you think of your, you know, financing and cost of financing in achieving what you're trying to do? Does that give you some kind of an advantage? Because it sits a little different from traditional NBFCs, correct?
So we are fully funded in year one. The difference between us and a lot of other fintech or NBFC platforms to start, I as a professional turning entrepreneur had no great desire or need of owning a large equity, right? For me, sustainability, and this is the learning of 25 years, for me, the you know, in a lending business, capital is prime. And if I try to protect my dilution and, you know, raise capital sequentially, then in these markets would have been completely gone bust. Right? So I decided to dilute myself down as much as possible, but raise capital. So that has helped now. So when I was doing that, nobody understood why I'm doing that. But, you know, God has been kind that gave me some thinking around it. Number two, when I look at the alternative lending platform and, you know, whether just not India, when I see evolution of that happening within the US, how Cabbage, OnDeck, Lending Circle, you know, platforms in UK. Finally, if you are not a bank, you have to think about yourself as somebody who has created a niche around some form of origination and underwriting and servicing the customer. And then the balance sheet has to be funded by a wholesale lender. So your asset has to keep flipping out of your balance sheet. Unfortunately, NBFCs in India in the last decade or so never understood this difference, wherein that they felt that they are like banks and that's why they have to borrow everything on the balance sheet and hold the asset. That's not a sustainable model because at some point of time this bites because how can you borrow from the same bank and then create an arbitrage, right? So you borrow at X price and lend at Y price and you are earning generating 20% return where those banks are not generating that kind of ROI. So we looked at this, we said, okay, we'll create a model which is deep underwriting, deep origination, very wide spread distribution. But we look at the liability side in three ways. Obviously, in the initial year, we have to leverage our balance sheet. But we are not building a platform to lever 6 times, 7 times into balance sheet. Second, we are building it so out of our four platforms which we have built, which is growth. GrowLine, which is our supply chain financing platform, GrowPlus, which is our direct and intermediation platform, GoDirect, which is our digital platform, and GrowXtreme, which is kind of a marketplace. On one side of it, we are bringing big banks. So we have got Bank of Baroda, SBI, now ICICI, few more are coming, and they are a co-lender to our platform, and the other side is the origination engine. So the way we think about the liability side is in threefold: on balance sheet borrowing, co-lending, which is, you know, on-tap, technically on-tap securitization or on-tap, you know, and third is securitizing your asset. Second, we look at it from the angle of what types and kind of asset. So we look at our asset base in two forms. The priority sector, which is needed for India because majority of the banks have an obligation towards priority sector. And second is impact financing. So there is a very deep pool of debt providers which are looking for, you know, platforms which are doing impact-related work. So if you look at our sector, subsector, we clear three of the SDG goals. We are a completely ESG-compliant platform. So large number of global DFIs eventually will come into our platform, right, from DFC, OPT, GFM, Interpartner, IFC, so on. So there is a very massive amount of impact-related pool of capital available. So that's why you have to think very sharply that what you would like to build on the liability side. The plain vanilla business of borrow from the bank and lend to a customer and earn the arbitrage is not sustainable.
I mean, you know, it's very interesting, like when we are discussing like business models, I mean, when you look at like online lending, digital lending or alternate lending, like you yourself mentioned, I mean, over the past 8 to 10 years, a variety of models have come in, right? I mean, you have those pure play alternate data oriented platforms, which kind of ended up as being merely origination channels for, scheduled commercial banks. And, we had peer to peer guys who came in, then RBI intervened and were like, okay, you need to get a license to operate. And then you have taken a much more underwriting driven bottom-up approach. And then you also have like neobanks coming in now within the system, which obviously, cannot underwrite. But again, they're kind of sitting on that fine line of being a, digital origination platform for traditional lenders. How do you see the overall, banking ecosystem evolve going forward? I mean, obviously, India is a very unique example because in terms of banks, state-owned banks, as well as traditional lenders, still pretty much, run the show from the perspective of scale. And you also have, all these new models which have come in over the past few years. What's your take on that?
Yeah. So remember one thing. The largest fintech lending platform in India is not more than 3,000 odd crores, from 2,500 to 3,000 crore, even after in existence for 6 to 7 years, right? We crossed 1,000 crore in first 9 months itself. And I'm telling you by reason. I look at this in two spectrum. On the one side of it, on the top of the pyramid is these large banks, right? Public sector and sometimes large private sector banks. And underpinning that, you have then large, diversified, large lending NBFCs, which do everything, right? From personal loan to truck finance to infrastructure to microfinance to, everything, corporate lending. And then below that, you have two kind of lending. Highly specialized small lenders, right? People who do cost-based financing, people who do, minimal limited geography-based financing, we've divided what we call sector-focused NBFCs, product-focused NBFC, and geography-focused NBFC on the one side of the spectrum. The problem there has been that they are all balance sheet lenders, but they don't have size of the capital which attract or reduce their cost of capital sequentially in a very fast pace. But otherwise, they are very good business. On the other side is all what are digital lenders. I think the most of the digital lender which was VC funded, they didn't realize that lending ultimately is a risk and balance sheet business. Irrespective of your progress of how well you can originate and attack, touch a customer, finally, if the risk portfolio doesn't perform which is in line with the market expectation, you will never be able to scale. And that is what has happened. All of them actually started with great amount of promise, but that could never get to them. Even if you are a fintech platform where you are just an originator and you are not taking the balance sheet risk, but in a way, if you can't create a portfolio which is not risky, lenders won't come to you. They might come to you as an experimentation, but then they will go away. So that's why there is a problem there as well. And that's why then this whole concept of FLDG started and all of that stuff. We are a hybrid of the two, right? On one side, we are deeply specialized. Other side, I don't like to use the term fintech because once I use the term fintech, some public sector bank would think we are also a reckless lender, which we are not. But that's why we are a very technology enabled and we are a hybrid of the two. But what we are saying is that we are a balance sheet provider. We will take an appropriate amount of risk. Once our asset matures, then these lenders can take it and then gives us the right to earn an income on that. So that is our thing.
So, as a business operator, just some key metrics. I mean, you've disbursed loans over 1,397 crores, roughly AUM about 850 crores with a blended yield of 14.3%. These are numbers that we saw in your press release or financials. What is the next move forward? Like, is the priority on growing your loan book? Is going deeper into it? I mean, still only 15 to 20% MSMEs are serviced from formal credit lines. So there's a massive growth runway in just growing your loan book. Is that the core focus for the next 5-10 years? And obviously, as tech grows and blockchain technology and things like that come in, that our aids, but the ultimate goal, you know, from a shareholder standpoint, is to maximize profitability. So how do you think about this going forward?
So one, we would Ugro to be the largest small business financing platform in India in next 5 years time. And you know, this is our public statement that by next 5 years we would like to at least have 1% of the market share. Today, if you look at the outstanding credit for MSMEs, are roughly around 17.5 lakh crores, grows around 15% per year. Take out this year of the wash year. So theoretically, it should be around anything between 22 lakh to 25 lakh crores. So I'm not talking about the credit gap in India, which will never get filled, in at least in my lifetime. So theoretically, we are, you know, at least building a platform which is 1% market share, which will give us an AUM of around 25,000. That's our question. Can we do it all in next 2 years? Answer is no. Because our state objective is we want to do a calibrated growth, profitable growth, and also make sure that all our stakeholders, shareholders, liability side, rating agency also have deep comfort with us. So that's why it's a sequential, high-paced growth, but it's very sequential. And what it requires us to, you know, build a platform which tackle the solving the problem of credit from different way. In India, the, you know, the entire small business financing, because you have inability to understand the cash flow of a small business, so it became a collateral-based financing. So I don't understand your business, I don't know how much cash you're generating, so give me a property, I'll give you a loan. As simple as that, right? Now that is not sustainable, right? We also do the same, but we are, you know, so that's why we created this four-prong channel in terms of origination of assets. So first is what we call our direct branches and intermediated business, wherein we think that 80% of India's SME business is intermediated. People who do tax, chartered accountants, DSA. So we created a digital platform where they can take our platform, go to customer, upload banking and GST, get yes and no there and there. Second, what we think is the biggest need of credit is into what we call supply chain ecosystem, which is we call ecosystem financing channel. So all the mid-market corporates between BBB to A in their value system, you know, their ecosystem, vendors, distributors, dealers, right? You have so much of unlocked working capital need, and that need deep digitization, reaching out to the customer, and your ability to integrate with the manufacturer data in terms of seeing what is the trend of the trade flow. So that is our second challenge. Third, we think that a large portion of SME customers or micro SME customers lies within the universe of payment platform, fintechs, and very small NBFCs, wherein the cost of capital for them is not available. Given our deep data focus and nimbleness around integration, so that's our partnership and alliances channel. And also marketplaces. So when I say marketplaces, not necessarily only Flipkart and Amazon, right? So our marketplaces are very varied degree of marketplaces which are in serving different kind of segment of the market. We are integrating with them. So if you have a data set and if you have a transaction flow of any nature, we are ready to integrate and solve or create a credit program on that. And fourth is digital direct. And in our digital direct, we are using public repository of data to go to a particular cluster and pre-filter the customer type and give a pre-approved loan. So for example, we ran a pilot, this will go off next year, where we looked at a 5 cluster, we looked at all the pharmacy in that cluster, we pulled whatever public data around that pharmacy was there, and then created a pre-approved program. So if you are a pharmacy near a hospital, our data created a different program for those pharmacies at a different price versus if you are a pharmacy in a residential condo. So that's our fourth pillar. So these are the four pillars in which we are expanding the customer base.
Right. I mean, you mentioned something very interesting that, secured loans in MSMEs is obviously like the most comfortable place where most people go in. I mean, and you mentioned that you yourself, as of now, obviously, I think almost 69 to 70% of your loan book is secured, but you plan to look more at supply chain financing as well as, you know, unsecured side of the spectrum. But
I don't think so. See, we should not categorize into secured and unsecured, right? So it is, what I meant is secured only by property as a collateral. Right? So large need of SME financing is also for equipment-based financing, right? Small machines, you know. So we are now integrating with large number of OEMs within our sector. So first we control the macro risk. So we are not doing defense also because we think that's a highly risk segment because, you know, policy changes can simply destroy the sector. But if it comes medical equipment based financing, you know, that will continue to grow. It's a defensive sector. So educational institute, education is a sector, but equipment for educational infrastructure institution is a very robust sector. So that is also a collateral, that is also a secure, but it is not seen by lenders as secured as what is seen as a property. So third is what we call cash collateral. So for example, if you look at a GEM platform, wherein Indian Railways is giving an order for buying stationery from a small MSME, wherein you know, he doesn't have to invent anything. He is getting an order. He needs funding to, you know, buy stationery and then service, give it to the Indian Railways, and the payment would come directly from the GEM platform. I don't think so. The risk of that business is, you know, is can be compared to an unsecured. So it's about your ability to underwrite the cash flow in an alternative way, in a very prudent manner. So we are not one who says that we can look at somebody's Facebook account and basis that we can pass a credit judgment. I think so. We are not that intelligent yet. Hopefully at some point that we would, but today we are not. So we only look at data which is underwritable and which can judge, through which you can judge the cash flow performance and basis that you can create a program. But obviously all of this, you cannot do it in day one, right? This is, you know, so that's why we do it sequentially, because if in my first year, think of this, I would have started everything as an unsecured business, I would have made much more profitable, I would have done lending at 24%, but post pandemic, I would have come at a 70% collection efficiency and 10% loss ratio, my rating would have gone down 2 notches and every lender would have gone away from it. The fact is that I started with a portfolio which was, you know, prime market at a secured at a gross yield of 11.5, collateralized by, you know, residential real estate, and post pandemic we would have come to a 95% collection efficiency. It would instill confidence into the rating agency, it would instill confidence to my liability side. And that's the base on which you want to do this gradual, you know, build up.
Right, but I mean, you know, come to think of it, like obviously, like when you were mentioning about like working capital is such a major issue, right? For a majority of Indian corporates at large, not just MSMEs, like in general. And you know, to kind of look at, you know, individual models and cash flow expectation, that sounds operationally a fairly intensive underwriting process. But that also has to be squared with the fact that the average ticket sizes in SME lending is not, like, you know, it's going to be a mid or small size. How do you kind of, you know, square both of those things together, having an operationally intensive underwriting process with the fact that per customer, the loan ticket is not going to be a very significant in scale?
Yep.
And that's where I guess tech comes into the play picture.
So when I look at the SME, micro SME lending, which is through my physical branch infrastructure, OPEX around that business is around 6-7%. In initial year, loss ratio is around 3%. So you have to model that vertical at a gross yield of 20-25% because it's a highly intense business, right? So 5 lakh ticket size, even if it's secured, require collection people, require physical infrastructure, underwriting teams, all of that. So that's one model. And that's why you have to design it that way, in that price point and that, you know, risk threshold. If you look at your entire supply chain business, So the way we are looking at it is that we are reducing the cost of origination and underwriting massively by using digitized underwriting process. So, for example, if I am opening a physical location, the depth of analysis which we do, I know in 100 or 400 or 200 meter geography, the profile of my customers before I actually enter into that location. So now you have that kind of data available, so you have to use it. When it comes to your second vertical, what we call supply chain, there, the reason why we do it, one is the tenor, because there is a very short tenor loan, which means that gives me liquidity on my balance sheet, right? Otherwise, you know, NBFCs have always borrowed short and lent long, and that's why they were always in trouble. So we're building at almost 30-40% portfolio, which is very, very liquid. Second, actually the digitization and the support of the anchor or the manufacturer actually reduces your OPEX. Think of if a manufacturer which is lying to making bulbs. Now, for the last 20 years, he has been selling these bulbs on credit to his distributor. Now, his capacity, he on his balance sheet has exhausted the capacity of own working capital. And he wants us as a lender to directly lend to the distributor but he is willing to take, you know, underwrite, you know, some form of a co-share the underwriting risk, but also takes the responsibility of everything, onboarding, origination, you know, collection, you know, his sales force getting doing the same job. For him, it's not a new job. He was collecting money for himself. Now he's just collecting money for me. So that's why that's a very attractive. Third is the same why we have created this partnership and, you know, model. Because if you are a payment platform or if you are a marketplace, you are the one who is doing everything for your customer. And that's why there's some risk sharing arrangement. And you continue to do irrespective that we have become the lender. So I think you have to, you know, think all of this from a 5-7 year perspective, and the picture and as a business has to be very clear, right? So when we say that we are targeting, you know, one of the best ROEs and ROAs in the country with a low leverage of 3.5 times, there is a reason why we do. We think we can do it because we have constructed everything, portfolio design, you know, all of that. So it's lending looks very simple business on the outside, borrow and lend, right? But underpinning that is a very complex business.
No, absolutely, and you know, kind of, I mean, on a kind of concluding note, what I would really like to get your, you know, view on is what's like in terms of, you know, what kind of a suggestion or, you know, advice you have for the regulator and for the government. I mean, the regulator and the government's role in credit over the last 6 to 7 months has kind of anyways increased spectacularly because of unprecedented reasons. And one thing philosophically I find personally very strange is that, as we were discussing earlier, that the government decided to take an intermediated route in India, right? Where the liquidity was given to the lenders and then it's up to the lenders to kind of, you know, take it forward. But that was, you know, subsequently also followed up by a lot of regulatory overhang on the same lenders, you know, in terms of moratoriums, in terms of now interest on interest moratoriums. We know that, you know, there's a Supreme Court hearing going on and a lot of, you know, things are kind of, so, I mean, we feel that if government wants to be hands off, they should stay hands off, but it kind of, you know, flip flops between two ends of the spectrum, right? So, and if you had to, like, you know, give your perspective from your vantage point on the entire, you know, I would say, interface between the regulator and the sector. And if you had some suggestions, what would that be?
So, this is ever evolving process. Whatever a whosoever does it, it is never enough. And that's what our country is all about. And that's why we are different than, you know, China and North Korea and Russia. So I would say that purely from alternative lenders which are not banks, it is proven now and it is well established that our needs of our markets, especially for small businesses and micro SME, cannot be fulfilled only by mainline banks. And that's why a role of NBFCs is here to stay for a very long period of time. Same for micro, like a microfinance institution, right? Banks could not do microfinance and microfinance institution became very large. So what is needed right now for at least next decade or so to find better and best ways to provide liquidity or liability solutions for NBFCs. And that is in the hands of the regulator and the government itself. Unless you don't do that, then the sustained support of NBFC and credit growth for MSME will not come. It will be always yo-yo, right? Sometimes liquidity will be there, sometimes it will not be. That's one. Now, I don't have anything more than that for regulators in the government. But more I have for, I don't know how many of your readers and viewers are small businesses, but whosoever are there, I think the more important is for also for small businesses. If you want credit, then there is a basic behavioral trait which you have to show, which is of being digitally. So I'm not in any way saying that you have to become a digital company. But there is a basic digital behavior and openness and transparency you have to show. So if I give you one example, when pandemic came, we moved our entire physical customer meeting to digital customer meeting, right? So we started video KYC. In the first round, 75% of our small business customers who came to us didn't have their mobile phone linked to Aadhaar, and our video KYC failed then and there. So this is basic necessity of having the digital footprint. 80% of our customers said, why we should give our OTP for fetching your GST? Oh, I'm not very comfortable with that. Now, you know, that's a public data. You should be comfortable with that. Otherwise, you cannot expect credit to be given. You don't have balance sheet, you don't have historical income, you don't have strength. And now if you say, I don't want to share my bank statement in digital form, I don't want to share my GST in digital form, then it becomes very difficult for a lender to lend to you. So I think so that awareness that this is a basic necessity which you should have would help even SMEs to get ready. And then last but not the least, you know, saving tax versus, you know, being transparent. If you want to avail credit, I think so that you are better off being very, very transparent and being, you know, everything is on your books and balance sheet is far superior in terms of growth of a small business versus saving that 10-15% tax, which otherwise it may become very difficult to do that. So people should just forget about that and rather do business the way it should be done.
Oh, this was this is super fascinating in terms of, you know, the kind of getting a very interesting perspective as a practitioner of lending, which is very different from what you get within policy circles or from market commentators. So no, thanks a lot, Mr. Nath, for your time. It was lovely talking about SME lending. That's something that you know, obviously is a very significant requirement in our country. And no, thanks a lot for your time. And I think this was fun chat, Sharad.
Yeah, it was a fun chat. Thanks, and good luck growing. You grow, and we'll obviously be watching it closely and cheering for it.
This is Nikhil Arora.
This is Sharad Tupran
signing off.